to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Psy's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Psy's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Psy. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Thursday Live. You are tuned to our Asia stream and we are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. My name is Karuna and it's my divine privilege to be hosting this segment called Morning Glory. The time in the ashram right now is 9:52 a.m. Indian Standard Time, and I apologize profusely for signing in late by 12 minutes this morning. The delay was caused due to some technical difficulties we were experiencing. Thank you very much for staying with us despite the delay on this very pleasant Thursday morning, June the 5th, 2014. And yes, you heard it right, Prashanthi Nilayam is quite pleasant these days as the temperatures have finally dropped after the few pre-monsoon downpours that we have had lately. Current weather conditions call for clear skies with the chance of some thunder and rain activity later on in the evening. Temperatures, minimum 27 Celsius, maximum 38 degrees. The breeze is very pleasant, especially in the mornings and after sunset. Now here's what's making news at this hour in Prashanthi Nilayam. The abode of supreme peace has had a wonderful recharge of sorts. The weather has changed for better and Baba's beloved students are back. And they're back in thousands along with their parents and chaperones. And don't you just love that back to school buzz in the mandir? Suddenly the pitch of the Vedam and the chorus of the bhajans becomes sharper as it is charged by the little voices of the primary school children as well as the deep-throated voices or recitation by university students. With the resumption of the academic year from June 1st, our slice of heaven is up and running full throttle. Dear brothers and sisters, as your siblings, all of us at Team Radio Psy take this opportunity to remind you that Guru Purnima is coming up next month on Saturday, July the 12th. And that is an ideal time for you to come home and receive Bhagwan's blessings. We hope you've already planned your trip to home to Prashanthi Nilayam next month. If not, we suggest you start cracking right away. The Divine Mother awaits to embrace you with open arms and we urge you to be here next month as Guru Purnima is just an ideal time, just the perfect time to energize ourselves and intensify our personal sadhana. Actually, come to think of it, any time is perfect for being in Prashanti. In fact, right now the Divine Valley is welcoming seekers that are coming here every single day from every single part of this vast country and of the world itself, all through the day and often at night as well. Our ashram is unusually busy right now and in a very happy sense. The feeling of joy is quite palpable in the faces of, among others, the happy parents whose children have just joined one of the many schools and colleges founded by Bhagwan Baba. Prashanthi Nilayam is such a happening place. And did you even know that we have our own planetarium? Dear listeners, the next time you're in town, please be sure to catch a show, or else you just might assume that only city folks have theatres to go to. Well, you need to think that again because, guess what? Our beloved Bhagwan has given us everything right here in Prashanthi Nilayam to nurture our body, mind and soul. And it's just that our entertainment, I guess, is of a higher caliber. We learn about physics and metaphysics as we marvel at the infinite mysteries of the universe at our space theater. So today I thought I should share once again with you some latest news from the Sri Satya Sai Space Theater, or that's what our planetarium is known, the name by which it is known here in Prashanthi Nilayam, the Sri Satya Sai Space Theatre. This season's presentation is called Back to the Moon for Good. This show is about the Google Lunar X Prize, which encourages private teams to send spacecraft to the moon. Since Prashanthi Nilayam plays host to a multilingual audience, the Sri Satya Sai Space Theatre also runs multilingual shows. Now, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, the Space Theatre runs Hindi shows. So please remember both the T's, that is Tuesday, Thursday, are for Hindi shows. On Saturday, the planetarium features the English show. And on Sunday, it is reserved for Telugu. And special shows can be arranged for larger groups on special request. I think you can route your request through the PRO office. All shows begin at 10:30 a.m. and the audience is expected to be seated well before the show begins. If you wish to catch a show at the planetarium, we suggest you head out after morning darshan and aarti so that you're at the venue by 10 a.m. Entrance is on first come and first served basis and there is no need for any passes. Now, should you wish to learn more about the planetarium, better known as the Sri Satya Sai Space Theatre, please visit www.saispace.in. Browsing through saispace.in may help you to schedule a planetarium show during your next trip to Prashanthi Nilayam. And now for the lineup of programs on Morning Glory today. An intriguing and inspiring and really enthralling Triswit Divinity interview from Down Under. Mr. Tom Leahy of Australia took the hot seat a few months ago, actually, I think shortly after Christmas, to recall his rather mystical and mysterious journey to Baba. This brand new episode of Triswit Divinity will be followed by our feature presentation this morning, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories. Today, I will play for you an episode from our classics collection. This one truly is one of my favorites. It's a narration of Mrs. Veena Vardhan's experiences from the very, very early days of Anandpur College, way before even my time. Those were the dream days when Baba's grace just flowed so incredibly on the very few students who studied there at that time. You must not miss this one. Dear listeners, now I'm very pleased to play for you the Triswit Divinity interview, and under the spotlight is Brother Tom Leahy of Australia, and here it is for your inspiration. Sairam, dear listeners, welcome to Triswit Divinity, our series of conversations with individuals whose lives have been touched and transformed by the love of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Our guest today is Mr. Thomas David Leahy, or Tom Leahy, from Adelaide, South Australia. Thomas Leahy has a background in fine arts, technical drawing, sculpture and general engineering, and he runs a construction business specializing in architectural and structural designs. He was a construction graduate in 1983 and then attended the Mont-Salvat Conservatorial of Fine Arts from 1984 to 86, where he studied as a goldsmith and specialized in bronze sculpture. He first experienced Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba in 1986 and has been a member of the Satya Sai organization since 1990 and has served at central, regional, national and international level since that time. He is a Group 3 and Group 4 SSC teacher. Sairam, Brother Tom, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam, thank you very much.
Tom, let's begin with your childhood. What sort of a cultural or spiritual background did you grow up in?
My background, or my childhood if you like, was fairly normal for an Australian boy. I grew up with four younger sisters, and we grew up in a fairly semi-rural area. Now it's a little bit more suburban, but we attended a Catholic church as a family until I was about 6 years old, and then my younger sister came along, and my parents decided that wasn't appropriate for us because the Mass was still in Latin. So after that point in time, there was no real religious, if you like, or spiritual inclination in the family. Although my father did dabble in various things, but nothing that rubbed off on the rest of the members of our family.
Mm-hmm. But then for a person who did not grow up in any specific organized religious background, you seem to have very unusual spiritual inclinations, very mystical. You spoke about certain instances from your early life during your talk on Christmas Day 2013. And it was very unusual, very unexpected of a boy who grew up in semi-rural Australia. Would you care to talk about it?
I think I've always had an inclination to understand that God has always been with me. And
Where did that come from? Where did that feeling of knowing that God is always with you come from?
Look, I don't know. I remember as a very, very young boy sitting amongst some ants and not being able to kill them and thinking, no, this is all part of the same thing. And I may have been even 3 years old at that point in time. And so that's one of my earliest memories in life. So I can't really pinpoint where that may have come from. It's always been with me.
Mm-hmm. And you thought, if I understand, you perceived God as Jesus as a child.
As a child, Jesus was the only form that I knew of God, because in our culture, that's basically, and at that point in time, there was really no other forms of God worshipped in the area I grew up in.
Mm-hmm. It was not very multicultural at that time, so I guess Christianity was the only religion.
Yes, it was multicultural as far as European countries were concerned, but they were also very Christian orientated.
Of course.
So there was no Eastern influences that I was aware of or we were aware of.
Mm-hmm. Now, then you've had some mystical, unexpected, unusual experiences, very out of the box.
Yes, I've had quite a lot actually through my life. One of them was what I mentioned during that talk.
You're welcome to repeat it for the sake of our listeners.
What I spoke about in the talk?
Yeah, sure.
It was in the early 1980s, and I had just come home from, I think I'd been... I had just started work, and I just come home, and I was sitting on the couch in my living room, and all of a sudden an object appeared right in front of me and landed on my lap. It hit me in the knee, and it gave me a shock, and then it fell on the floor.
What do you mean appeared? It didn't fall from the ceiling?
Well, I couldn't work that out. I saw it all of a sudden, and then it hit my leg. So
what was it like?
It was a stone pendant. It was probably about, I'm looking at my fingers, it was probably about maybe 30 to 40 centimetres long.
Mm-hmm.
It was possibly, I speak in millimetres, mm-hmm. About maybe 15 millimetres wide.
Did it have an image or a form on it?
No, it was just a piece of stone, but it had, and it was a bluish purple colour, and it had two white bands around the top with a clasp type thing on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked to the ceiling also. Naturally, I looked everywhere to think, where did this come from?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't understand it. I just couldn't understand it. So, but a few miraculous type things had happened earlier in my life. I had quite a few accidents, bad accidents, where I recovered very quickly. So things like that didn't really shock me a lot. But this one, I still don't understand it. So I took it to a psychic friend, and they said, yes, I had to wear this. This was specifically for me, and I had to wear it. So from there on, I wore it.
Around a necklace, around a
yes,
chain.
Yes, I had it put on like a chain, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then how long did you have it on you?
Well, it wasn't long after that. Let me think. Somewhere within the year, maybe a little over a year, I had a dream, a very inspirational dream, and I was wearing the pendant, and in the dream, I was the character in the dream, and in the dream, I had to take the pendant to a specific place which was like underground and deposit it in a cave. And I did that in the dream, and when I did that, it was like a whole new world opened up for me. Like, it was very hard to explain, like something I'd never seen. It was like going into a new dimension.
In your state when you were awake?
No, this is in the dream state. And then I woke up from that immediately, and I felt a profound sense of... I'd never had a dream like that. I'd never had anything like that. So I wrote it down in detail.
So the awakening happened in a state of dream?
The awakening, yes, the awakening, when I say the awakening, the depositing of the stone pendant,
yes,
which was what I was doing in the dream, happened Yes, that happened during the dream, and then the awakening happened. That happened in the, so that was, it was explained to me what would happen when I did that.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, I was being shown, if you like, by myself, what to do next.
And then how did you follow, how did you know where to go and deposit it?
Well, that was interesting because another psychic friend of mine who out of the blue said to me that there would be something in my life that I would have to, that I had that was precious that I would have to give up and my life would change after that. So that was another sign that confirmed that. Another person again also, another psychic, I've had a life of psychic people approaching me, I've never gone to anyone, and telling me things that are either I haven't understood or are yet to happen. So, so it eventually happened when I was up in the far north of Australia, as I told in the story. I'd gone to a place called Katherine, mm-hmm. which is up in the Northern Territory,
mm-hmm.
and I had a friend who'd started a construction company over in a place called Broome, which is over on the far northwest coast of Australia. And I was looking at opportunities in Katherine for doing a specific type of building, and I had some friends there, but it didn't turn out. So then from there I made my way to this place called Broome, and it was on the way there that I cut my foot very badly that I spoke about in that talk. I'd gone, and of course I had to travel in a four-wheel drive to make that journey at that point in time. The roads there, a lot of them were dirt at that point in time, and also it wasn't the wet season, but it was close to the wet season, and during the wet season it's almost impossible to cross, so you need to have the right type of vehicle. So I had gone part of the journey, and of course you need to camp. You need to sleep out in a tent, or I would often sleep on top of the four-wheel drive, especially when you got where there was into the northern rivers where there's crocodiles and things like that. So you don't want to take any chances by sleeping on the ground. Not that it happens very often, but it does happen that people get attacked. So I had gone down to a river during the day to get to have a wash and get a drink, and there was a metal spike sticking out of the ground which I didn't see, and that cut, put a large cut all the way up the back of my foot. And so that... after that happened, I managed to climb back up and I set up a camp nearby, and that's when I, all I could do was pray, and Jesus was the only form of God I knew. And so, and I had some sort of a scripture with me too that I used to carry around, but it had nothing to do with the Bible. It was something else that someone had given me, which was, I don't know where it came from, but I related to it a lot. So I used to read that.
What was it, in English?
It was English, yes. English is the only, mm-hmm. is my first language, and I think in English, so.
Mm-hmm.
And so I used to study that occasionally, and it's interesting because I was looking for it recently, because I had another experience about a year and a half ago, where a psychic person approached me and told me about that particular piece. Out of the blue, I was at a friend's funeral, and this person, and that shocked me, and they mentioned this piece, particular piece to me out of the blue, and I was very shocked by that. And I looked for it, and I couldn't find it in my home, so then I didn't worry about it after that. That's, I've gone a bit off track there. So I made my camp for a couple of days, and I just prayed. I just prayed and rested, and then the main concern was infection, because it was a bad cut. And it started to heal, and it was okay, and then I realized I could drive with my foot elevated, and of course the four-wheel drive has a hand throttle, so you don't need to use, you can just use one foot if you have to. So I drove for quite some time, for a couple more days, and then I reached this place called the Bungle Bungles, which was sort of on my list to visit as well, being a sacred Aboriginal site. It's a beautiful place. It has mountains, if you like, or beehive-shaped hills, for want of a better description. And there's rivers that flow sort of through and around them, and they're not that high. But maybe the highest would be 50, 60 metres high, you know, and there's quite a lot of them in a row. They're spectacular to look at. And of course there's caves and various things associated with them. And there's rivers that run through the wet season. And this was just coming onto the wet season, so the rivers weren't running. And the river creek beds, they're more creek beds. They're made of very rounded stones. So I made my way into this place, and it was a very difficult drive in there. It took quite a long time to drive in there. And I got out, and then I had a strong feeling when I was in there that, you know, I felt like I was, a lot of the times I feel I'm quite guided by doing things, and I tend to follow my intuition a lot rather than, although I do like to rationalize things, especially in my work, but otherwise I follow my intuition a bit. And I felt I had to go to this place, and I walked up a creek bed for quite a few hours with a very, very bad foot, and normally you wouldn't do that, but I really felt, you know, this is what I should be doing. And I got to a sandy area, and I thought, this is enough, and I stopped there. I had a blanket with me and a couple of oranges and a bottle of water. I decided to sleep there the night under the stars. It wasn't that cold. And I slept. There didn't seem to be any bad wild animals or anything like that. And then I woke early in the morning, and the only thing on my mind was the pendant which I'd been wearing. And I knew that I'd come to the place where I had to. The dream had come back to me, not during my sleep, but in my mind. I had ruminated on that dream, and I thought, this is it. If it's not going to happen now, when's it going to happen? And because it wasn't specific in that initial dream that I'd had. When to do this, so I thought, well, I have to make a choice about this. I could see some caves in the distance, and they weren't easy to get to, and I climbed up a sort of, not sheer cliffs by any means, but able to sort of make my way up on, if you like, all fours. And I got up to a reasonable sized ledge, and there were several caves that weren't that big enough to go inside, and inside those were smaller caves. Little sort of cavelets, if you like, which I could fit my hand into, and I thought, this is it, and I put it in there. And I came out of the cave, and I felt this wonderful feeling come around me. And this is a very powerful place as well. It's an Aboriginal sacred site, and they're very powerful places in Australia, very powerful. And I felt this very strong energy come all around me, and I felt like I was being carried. I felt like my feet weren't even touching the ground. All the pain in my leg left, and the wound on my foot, when I say it healed, sure, it was still there, but I could do anything, and there was no problems with it. I was able to walk perfectly, and I climbed back down, and I walked back along the rocky beds, and I remember I was singing very loudly as well. I was sort of singing. There was no one around, and I felt on top of the world. It was
so the exhilaration you had experienced in your dream stage was actually playing out.
More or less, yes, yes. It was very exhilarating. It was a wonderful feeling. It wasn't necessarily a feeling of peace. It was very hard to describe. It was very energetic, extremely energetic. Like I said, I felt like I wasn't even touching the ground. That's how I felt. I felt like I was being carried. And I made my way back. I felt also, the interesting thing was that for some reason I knew I had to get out of there very quickly. For what reason, I don't know. And I made my way back to the four-wheel drive, and I walked perfectly back over the rocky stones along the creek bed. I got into the four-wheel drive, and it took me a long time, like hours, to drive into this place. And I drove out of there at top speed in record time, once again, as if I wasn't even in control, as if I was being carried in the car, very, very fast, flying over sand dunes and all sorts of stuff. And as soon as I hit the main road, or for want of a better word, the roads weren't that good, I had two flat tyres immediately. And you would think that should have happened when I was going through the other bit. So I had to stop. And when that happened, that energy left, and everything was back to normal. And mind you, my foot was good, though. There was no problems with that, but that whole feeling had gone. And I always would carry two spare tyres. That was always a rule in the outback. So it took me quite a while. I changed both wheels, and then I got on my way. So that whole saga was over. That ended. That whole part ended. And it was a number of years between when that first, you know, appeared, for want of a better word, and when I let go of it. And it was soon after that.
So during the years when you were in possession of this mysterious object that had appeared from out of nowhere,
so you think
or believe, what was your life like in terms of your professional life? Were you a student, personal life? How were things going for you?
The interesting thing was I had already I studied and worked in the construction industry for a short amount of time, and I decided that I didn't want to do that anymore. So then I went into the arts. So that's about when that happened. And that's when I decided to, and I had, I was very lucky to work at Montsalvat, or to get the, it was like an apprenticeship, if for want of a better word, as a goldsmith. The man who I studied under is he's now a famous sculptor. He's now no longer with us. But he was a terrific teacher of mine. His name is Machum Skipper. His wife was also a very good sculptor, and my interest really was in sculpture, even though I trained with in alchemy as well. We used to fabricate gold, make carrots and melt it. It was really old school stuff, so I really enjoyed that. Very creative, and fabricated a lot of pendants and all sorts of bits and pieces, and would be in exhibitions and things like that. And then I trained in what we call lost wax, which is mainly bronze sculpture. You make one-off pieces and you lose the original when you make it. And I thought that was fascinating, that doing that sort of work.
So I guess you did find those were the years when you found your true purpose in life.
Well, yes and no. Because
professionally, at least.
Yes and no, because mm-hmm. it changed. Because what happened is that Machum, for want of another word, he was a bit like a guru to me as well. Not that I would ever use that word. He was very strict, but he always said to me that you needed to have what we call a noxious trade. He said, in this profession, it's not easy to survive, so you should have something that ticks over, that has income, so you can do the things that you really want to do, or things that you can do in life. Otherwise, you know, you'll never be able to do this sort of work. Because being an artist or a sculptor, you need to have a good income to be able to produce. So he sort of drummed that into me. So eventually, and I went back into the construction industry, and I realized that that certainly was a much better form of income, a very steady form of income for me. And the art side of it, I enjoyed the creativity, but I didn't like the art scene in where you had to sell yourself to sell your work. That didn't appeal to me at all. There was a lot of egoism in that, so you're really selling yourself and not your pieces, and that I couldn't fit into very well. So in the end, I went back into the construction industry and gave all of that up.
Completely?
Completely.
Oh, I see. Do you regret it?
Well, I gave it up, and with the intention of taking it up when I could no longer work in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. So I'm still in that industry. Whether I take it up in another 10 or 15 years, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You need to have quite fine motor skills to do that sort of work. Mm-hmm. So whether I do that or not, it's whatever happens in my life will be whatever happens. And they're some of the things that have just happened.
So now in the story of your life, Swami came in a very interesting way. You went to a park and there was a ranger who spoke to you about it?
Well, prior to that, yes, there was an event that I think is very significant prior to that. And this is on the same journey as the stone pendant. Mm-hmm. This is all the same journey. Okay. It all happened in a very short period of time.
Which year was it? Would you remember?
This is 88, 89. Mm-hmm. So because that was the period I had gone up in Northern Australia for the work. Mm-hmm. And then when I got, after leaving the stone pendant in that place, I went to another location where I worked for some time with a friend of mine who had started the business there, and we were constructing small two or three type units in one. That sometimes they were single, like triple story sort of type, that was more like tourist style accommodation right up in the northwest coast of Australia, a very popular place for people to go and visit. So he had a good business there, and he said, look, come and join me. So I went there, and we did reasonably well. And I was only there a short period. And then from there I left and headed down to Perth. That was my journey then down to Perth. And it was on the way that I'd stopped. I'd taken up surfing, like surfing. We used to carry also a surfboard on the four-wheel drive. And so when we got to the coast, I'd, you know, take time out and go surfing. And I heard there was a very good surf break at this particular place called Exmouth, which is an army base. It's a remote area, but it's a big army base in Australia. I got there, and there's a terrific surf break, but it's a long way out, and you have to paddle a long way. And I could see it. I got there in the evening. I could see it. I thought, it looks really good. I'll set up camp here for a few days. So I set up my camp, but I didn't realize how high the winds would be, how strong, and they were extremely strong. So strong that I felt the tent was going to blow over any second, so I didn't sleep all night. It was quite scary. And at first light again, I got up and went to pack up, and then But I couldn't do that because the wind was so strong. There was it just blew the tent in every direction, and I was making piles of stones on it here and there, and piles of sand. And
you were all by yourself.
I was all by myself, and there was nobody around. Mm-hmm. Nobody around. And this went on for a long time. I don't know if you can imagine that, but it went on for a long time. No matter which way I tried to fold the tent, the wind came from that direction. It was as if it was totally against me. And to this day, I have trouble with the wind, believe it or not.
It was so traumatizing, huh?
Well, I don't know if it's so traumatizing. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it is. But it was very traumatizing. But I find that because, and when I say I have trouble with the wind, I'm certainly not scared of the wind, but if we're doing a big project or outside, the wind comes along, it always gives me havoc. Now I have enough patience to wait for it. I thought I had enough patience then, but like I said, it was almost an hour of trying to fold a tent. And that's a ridiculous thing, totally ridiculous thing. And in the end, I started yelling at the wind and yelling at God and the sky and, you know, what I had no option. There was nothing left to do. I tried everything physically possible. So all I could do was get cross at God, more or less, for making it like that, believing that was the case to a certain degree. And then I was down on my knees in tears, and that prompted me to ask why I was here. And what it was all about, and who was I. And in that moment, you know, the wind stopped. It just stopped dead, just when that happened. And I felt very small. I felt very small. I can see it in my mind now.
Why did you feel small? So I would have felt like a victor because, you know, eventually I would have thought, oh, I should have gotten mad earlier because the wind would have stopped sooner.
I felt small because I'd totally broken down. You know, I'd totally broken down. I'd totally surrendered. You know, like I was just a mess.
Mm.
You know, I was at my wit's end.
Oh.
Over the tent. But mind you, I had asked, you know, I'd asked...
But you asked profound questions.
I asked the most profound questions. And I felt very humiliated. So then I remember, actually, I remember the saying about... There's a saying about the footprints in the sand. About there's only one set of footprints, but it's God carrying us. And I remember that saying because I remember when it stopped, I walked to the beach and I saw that set of footprints and I thought, yes. I remember that came into my mind. And then, because I was on the beach again, I walked to the sea and walked back. And then, you know, because I didn't fold the tent up immediately. I walked down to this, you know, I just needed time out. Walked back and then I folded everything up, got into the four-wheel drive and took off. And my next destination was Monkey Maya, was a place called Shark Bay, where this smaller bay within it called Monkey Maya was. So that's where I came across the ranger when I arrived there. And
out of the blue, the man tells you, have you ever been to India?
Out of the blue, I pulled into the ranger station, and then it's like a reserve. It's like, for want of a better word, like a state park.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a protected area,
yes,
because of the dolphins.
Right.
But there is a campground there, mm-hmm, and there's a store there for supplies. There's a township a bit further away for more supplies, but it's remote and has some self-sufficiency. So you need to pay a fee for the maintenance of the place. So it was a $5 fee at that time, and you had no way but to go in, drive through past a hand-operated boom gate,
mm,
where someone would come out and you'd pay the fee. And so I didn't even get out of the car. The person came out and they told me the fee, and I paid them the fee, and then they asked me, had I ever been to India? And I looked at them and I said, no. And they didn't say too much more.
Mm-hmm.
They may have, but I don't remember. But that's the bit I remember.
Were you surprised by this question?
Yes, I was very surprised by the question.
Had India been anywhere on your radar prior to that?
When I was quite young, when I became a vegetarian at 17.
Why?
That was funny. There was a very strong yearning within me to do that. There was no rational explanation why I did it. I just decided that this wasn't the right thing to do, and I felt that I couldn't go on eating meat. I felt that was the wrong thing to do totally, so I just decided there and then on the spot that it was, from there on, I was not going to eat meat. So, and it was at a point where there was meat in front of me, and I decided this was it. I was old enough to make my own decision at 17. And so, you know, a shock to my friends and my family, and I stood by my ground the whole time up till now. So at that point in my life, and I was looking for also for what do you eat. And so I came across another group of people who were vegetarians, not many, and older people than myself at that point in time, and they talked about India and that sort of thing, and but that was my only route. I really couldn't understand what they were talking about at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so this was before KFC and McDonald's came to India, so India and vegetarianism went along quite well.
Yes.
In those days.
Yes, but I do recall buying a book called At the Feet of the Master or At the Feet of the Lord by J. Krishnamurti at that age, mm-hmm. and reading that book and understanding parts of it but not all of it, but, mm-hmm. but that was it. And after that, and I carried that book around with me but never really referred to it. I bought it, I was inspired to buy it, I bought it and I read it, I got something out of it, and mm-hmm. then, and that was my only real touch. After that there was nothing.
So let's go back to the ranger. So he asked you an odd question and you went about and said no, and you went into the park.
I went into the park and there was a place where you had to park the car. And there was quite a few vehicles parked there. I parked the vehicle and took my stuff. Actually, I could drive to unload my camping things, which I did, and then drove the car back into the car park. And there was an orange microbus. That's like a... Do you know what a microbus is?
Not really.
It's like a van.
But that takes you for a tour inside?
No. It's like a camper van.
Okay.
It's a microbus will be understood by most European and Western countries. It's a... or a combi, they call it a combi. Anyway, it's a...
camper.
Like a camper. It's
okay,
a camper.
It's a
yeah,
camper.
It's only a two or three person
people
camper.
Can
it's not
in
a very
it.
Big camper. Yeah,
got it.
Yeah. It's a camper. And on the side of that I saw a sticker. And I thought it was a man who I don't know, but he was a famous musician called Jimi Hendrix.
Yes,
which probably a lot of people make that association mm-hmm. with Sai Baba.
And
Because of the hair. And I saw that from a distance, and that's what I assumed. And I thought, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's an appropriate sticker to be on a camper van. That's what I thought at the time. But it wasn't. I realized it wasn't him. And I thought, yeah, and I looked at it. And there was funny things around the edge, but I didn't pay too much attention. Anyway, that evening, I had a dream. And in the talk that I gave, I didn't go into detail of the dream, which I'll go into a little bit more detail here.
Sure.
I had a dream, and he came... Actually, in the dream, I was standing as a small child at a bus stop at my grandparents' place, and I was standing holding my lunch, ready to go to school. And the school bus came along, and there was a man driving the bus in an orange dress with bushy hair, but he had a matted lock coming out of either side. And the bus came along, but the bus didn't stop for me. It kept going. And then out of the back window, that same man was standing there. And in the talk, I just described what he looked like, but this is actually what happened. He was standing there and he had the orange dress, the bushy hair and the matted locks, and he was holding what I thought was a pitchfork, which turns out to be a trident, in one hand, and the other hand was up with the palm facing outwards. And that was there for quite a while. He was standing in the back of the bus, big bus window. His full form was there as the bus went by. And that's the main part of the dream I remember, him standing there, me just standing there looking at him. And then I woke up. And I woke up immediately, and I had that a wonderful feeling of peace. I had this real peaceful feeling, like my mind was still, and I just felt it was different to the feeling I had when the stone was deposited. It was a different feeling from that.
You're listening to Radio Sai Global Harmony, bringing you the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Trust with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises, and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Sri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970 when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and, of course, tiny little rosebuds, which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a movie or a video, mm-hmm. right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love all, serve all. We've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock, because we put it on millions and millions of T-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, love all, serve all. We put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Dressed with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Tuesday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Dressed with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page on our website, radiosai.org. Or you can download and listen to any interview of your choice in the Dressed with Divinity series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/Trist. That is radiosai.org/TRYST or Trist. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory, coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, where the time right now is 10:32 a.m. Indian Standard Time. Today is the 5th of June 2014, and you just heard part one of our two-part interview with Mr. Tom Leahy of Australia. We are eager to have your feedback to this conversation. As always, you can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. And you can catch part two of this interview right here on Morning Glory next Thursday. It gets very interesting in part two, so be sure to catch it. And now, it is time for us to revisit the cardinal draw of the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. From the time he was a little boy, Baba championed the cause of pluralism. Early in his avataric career, he called for an all-inclusive approach to religious diversity when he said, and I quote him, "Let the different faiths exist. Let them flourish. Let the glory of God be sung in all languages in a variety of tunes. That should be the ideal." Unquote. And throughout his life, Baba lived this truth. His ashram in Prashanthi Nilayam is possibly the only place on this planet where thousands of varied faiths, spiritual and cultural traditions celebrate Christmas, Shivratri, Eid and Buddha Purnima with the same and equal love and devotion for God. For example, it has become quite a tradition here to revisit and reflect upon the life and gospel of the Buddha, and we have devotees come here to do so from Buddhist countries across Asia. Year after year, we have witnessed Tibetan monks from Dharamsala and Kusalnagar and Buddhists from Thailand and other Far Eastern countries come and offer their prayers in the immediate divine presence of Bhagwan Baba. And the same tradition continues on Christmas and on Shivratri. And next month, we will see the multi-faith, multilingual and multicultural devotees from all over the world come here for celebrating Guru Purnima and Bhagwan's divine omnipresence. We just hope you're going to join us as well. And now it is time for our feature presentation. Today's episode of Fleeting Moments comes from our classics collection. I have picked one of my favorite narratives. It is the experiences of my senior from Baba's Anandpur College, Mrs. Veena Vardhan. Dear brothers and sisters, I hope you will enjoy it as much as I did when I heard it first. So let's roll out Sister Veena Vardhan's Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories account. Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome back to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, a program where graduates of Bhagwan Baba's schools and university recall their fondest memories of a life lived in the sunshine of a chancellor who is pure love personified. Today we present an audio rendition of Mrs. Veena Vardhan's experiences. Mrs. Veena Vardhan graduated from the Anantapur College in 1973. Currently, she lives in Chennai, Tamil Nadu. Her experiences first appeared in Radio Sai's e-journal, Heart to Heart, in November 2009. You can find them under the segment, Swami and Me.
Drawing from the fountain of infinite bliss. A student from the earliest batch of Bhagwan Baba's Anantapur College recalls her golden memories of being the daughter of the divine. If bliss is a happy memory that can be revisited in the deep recesses of the heart for repeated enjoyment, without diminishing its power in the least bit, I am blessed to have a vast reservoir at my disposal. Having been amongst the first batch of students 1970 to 73 to have graduated from the Anantapur campus of Bhagwan's College, which later grew to be the Sri Satya Sai University, I am blessed to have plenty of blissful memories to fall back on and soak my soul in this warm spring of pure joy from which I draw my strength to face life and all that it throws at me. My name is Veena Vardhan and I hail from Kadapa in Andhra Pradesh. Currently, I live in the city of Chennai in Tamil Nadu. When I studied for my Bachelor in Arts from what was then the Sri Satya Sai Arts and Science College for Women at Anantapur in Andhra Pradesh, I was the very first batch of girls to reside in the newly constructed hostel building. My parents wanted me to study at Bhagwan's College since my elder sister, V. Puliyamma, was a lecturer in the Department of Economics at the college. Initially, I did not know much about Bhagwan, but as I experienced his parental love and care for each of us, his daughters, my love for him and faith in his divinity grew on its own. It was his detailed attention towards our welfare that was impossible to miss. For instance, right into the program, Bhagwan realized the challenge that many of us faced coming from a non-English speaking background. He arranged for extra coaching classes just to help us cope with our studies. Like a concerned parent, he would visit us almost every week, traveling the 120 kilometer distance to and fro, just to ensure that we were all well looked after, happy, comfortable, and at home in our new surroundings. What sacrifices he made for our welfare! His love was simply the sweetest experience of our lives. We fervently counted days until his next visit. Bhagwan encouraged us to be forthcoming in expressing our problems to him. He told us, "Do not fear the principal or warden. Tell me your problems. Be bold." Bangaru. Bangaru means gold, a term of endearment in Telugu. He would say, "Bangaru about what you want and ask me. You all have left your parents and come here. It is my duty to take care of you." So in all simplicity we asked for fans to be installed, troubled as we were by the arid and hot weather of Anantapur. The very next day, Bhagwan got fans fixed in our dining hall, making our meal times a lot more enjoyable. Like a doting mother, he would send pickles, sweets, fruits and such goodies for us. Bhagwan became a ever smiling, ever loving, ever caring mother. So pure, gentle and sensitive was his love and concern that the progression of our bonding with the Divine Mother, whom we found in Sai, was natural and unstoppable. During the times he came to visit, which was almost every week, often for overnight or a few days, he would spend the mornings in meeting the staff. We, the students, could not help ourselves from hovering in the corridors of the college building waiting for the meetings to conclude. And then we could interact with the Lord who had become the only goal of our lives. Evenings with Bhagwan were the most memorable. We would gather around him just as iron filings are drawn to a magnet. We were all one big happy family with our divine parent seated in the center, ever willing to fulfill our childish fantasies. I remember how we used to ask him to sing bhajans of our choice. He always obliged. Ever so sweetly, he belted out such numbers as were most popular with the students then. He would sing, Chitta Chura Yashoda Kebal, Navanita Chura Gopal. He would also sing Natvarlal, Govinda Krishna Jai, and Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. After the bhajan singing session, Bhagwan used to dine with us. He would often inquire if we were getting the same quality of food always, or if the good food was a special treat because he was visiting us. We just could not miss his parental concern and love for us. The cup of our joy overflowed too many times over, and our sweet Sai became to us our divine mother, father, friend and guide, all rolled into one. The experience was absolutely heavenly. At times he made us laugh our heads off with his great sense of humor. His divine comedy shows included the time he insisted that a young lecturer who had just got married tell him the name of her husband. As it is not considered proper etiquette for a wife to utter the name of her husband in some traditions, she simply blushed and lowered her head. Bhagwan then mischievously coaxed her, I am asking you, won't you tell me? At last she relented to his pressure tactics and told him the name of her husband ever so softly. Immediately the playful Swami teased her. Dunnapota, or buffalo, another term of endearment in Telugu. Can any lady mention her husband's name? We all laughed merrily at her discomfort as Bhagwan pulled off the trick so sweetly. Ever the teacher, in his light and serious moments, he taught us life lessons that have stood the test of time through the 4 decades since. He told us repeatedly that you must learn to conduct yourselves well in the world after you leave the portals of this college. Emphasizing the vital role that women play as the thermostats of the spiritual and moral climate of their homes, he urged us to strive to be good homemakers first and to bring a good name to our parents, in-laws and college before venturing into other ambitions. First things first, he reminded us, because when all is well on the home front, life will flow and expand with greater ease beyond the home as well. He knew that by educating girls, he was educating the entire family on how to live a value-based life. Bhagwan taught us to integrate spirituality into our practical lives as homemakers, telling us never to undermine the significance of this role. He explained this by giving us easy-to-relate examples on how one can actually follow the paths of action, devotion and knowledge all at once as homemakers. He said the path of jnana or knowledge came into play in the very act of cooking a wholesome meal for the family, as one had to know which ingredients and in what quantity to use for making the food healthy and tasty. If knowledge of balanced culinary skills was indicative of the jnana marga or path of wisdom, then the very act of preparing for the meal and cooking it was karma marga or the path of action. Finally, the path of devotion or bhakti marga is easy to follow through if one thinks of God while cooking and offers the food to God as prasadam or consecrated food for the family members that consume it, seeing them as incarnations of the same divinity. Then to serve it, one must be loving and ever smiling, happy to have the privilege to be doing so. When undertaken in such a spirit, the seemingly simple act of cooking and serving a meal becomes the highest spiritual discipline. Swami explained how the role of a homemaker offers great chances for spiritual growth. He also told us that a good homemaker fosters devotion by organizing devotional and service activities. Personally for me, the most memorable experience of my student days goes back to the time when one day I had to wrap my head around a surprise political science test for which I was totally unprepared. So for some last minute cramming, I retreated to the quiet college building early one morning. It was a Thursday, and I was wearing a white sari, as we all dressed in white on that day of the week. Stressed and panic-stricken, I was engrossed in serious studying when I suddenly heard a soft, sweet voice saying, "Virijana Mallipu," which means blossoming jasmine. And lo behold, it was him. Bhagwan had arrived in the college just then, totally unannounced, and was standing right next to me, just as it typically happens in one's dream. If that wasn't enough, he then proceeded to materialize a delicious apple and gave it to me. My joy knew no bounds. Even today when I think of that moment, I find myself lost in bliss. Sometimes I wonder if it really happened. I later ate the apple and shared it with everyone else. Then Bhagwan advised me to go and inform the principal and the warden that Bhagwan had arrived in the college. Now you know what I mean by this reservoir of bliss that I dip into every now and then to refresh my soul. If his love and caring for us made Anantapur our home away from home, then Prashanthi Nilayam was definitely our second home, to which he invited us for all the major festivals. We had many chances to participate in the various service activities, as Bhagavan constantly told us to open our hearts and broaden our minds by performing acts of selfless service. We worked in the canteen joyfully, and to endorse our efforts towards self-growth, our divine Sai treated us to sweets, ice creams, and even fruits. We celebrated his birthday with great joy. Those images are etched in our hearts of him coming in a procession early in the morning along with the chosen mother, Ishwaramma. The blessed mother and senior ladies would apply the ceremonial oil on Bhagwan's hair. I remember he used to wear yellow in the morning and a white robe in the evening. He would sit on a swing while playback singer and devotee Mrs. P. Sushila would render devotional songs. Those days of the birthday celebrations felt so heavenly that we didn't realize how time flew by, and we used to return to Anantapur with a very heavy heart. While I enjoyed such close contact with the Divine Lord Sai during my student days, life later dealt me a different hand. For a period of 20 years, I could not come back to my home, my Prashanthi Nilayam. I did have an occasional darshan of Baba at Bangalore or Chennai, but not much else. Then one night, I dreamt that Swami came to my house. I was confused as to how I should receive him. He said to me, "You need not do anything. Take Pada Namaskar. You've got higher sense." After this dream, I've always felt Bhagwan's guidance in overcoming the problems of my life. And these solutions come through different channels. It could be from intuition, books, timely advice from elders, whatever. 6 years into my marriage, Swami finally blessed me with the experience of motherhood. Once it so happened that I was at a function at the factory where my husband worked at that time. I prayed to Bhagwan to bless my child. Just then, a roll of paper fell from the sky and landed next to me. After a moment's hesitation, I picked and unrolled that paper. I was astonished to find a 10 by 10 inch picture of Bhagwan lighting a lamp. I cried with joy His blessings in the most unexpected of locations lit my child's life. To this day, I treasure that precious picture. After many years, I took the leap of faith and decided to continue my education. I wanted to get a bachelor's in education degree. As I anxiously awaited my results, my son brought me a picture from his friend's mother. It was of our dearest Bhagwan with the words, "Why fear when I'm here?" I felt a resurgence of confidence and calm. Once, when my husband was sent on a military mission to the troubled state of Jammu and Kashmir, I was very worried, since I was unable to contact him for many days due to stormy weather. I prayed hard and heard Bhagwan's voice assuring me, "You are going to get a call. Don't worry." Within a few seconds, the telephone rang, and sure enough, it was my husband on the line. All was well with Bhagwan's grace and compassion. Today, after a gap of 20 long years, finally it looks like he has tested me enough. Now, for the past 12 years, Bhagwan has given me the opportunity of visiting and serving in his divine abode, Prashanti Nilayam. Additionally, I feel so blessed to serve as his instrument as I assist the visually impaired by being the reader and scribe. It is as though my tender-hearted parent is making up for the 2-decade-long exam he put me through. I pray that this shower of his love and presence in my life continues forever. When I try to say it all, I realize how inadequate words are as a medium to express my deep and loving gratitude to Bhagwan for his presence in my life. I shudder to think what and where would I be without him. In being his daughter, I draw my sense of self-worth, and that is all that matters to me. Sai Ram.
You just heard the experiences of Mrs. Veena Vardhan, a graduate of Bhagwan Baba's college at Anantapur. It came to you as a part of our Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories series. Thank you for joining us, and Sai Ram from Prashanti Nilayam.
Let me narrate to you an episode. Our room leader was Kotesa. I asked him, "Is it compulsory to go for darshan?"
Oh my God.
I had the nerve to ask him that.
I think it's a very sea change when you become a Sai student, because it's only when I joined the Satya Sai College I discovered that this God is not a photograph on the wall, and he's not something so distant. It's something very, very near you.
And this was lovely, because there you had on the gymnastic bench a student on one side, Swami on the other side, locked in battle. Again, it was arm wrestling
with Swami.
And having been given the divine golden opportunity to have studied in his institutions and directly experienced his love, then we have to really live our lives to reflect his teachings.
Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges. You can also listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai on the Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live, which starts at 9:40 a.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to this at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/sai-students. That is radiosai.org/SAI-STUDENTS. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Morning Glory. So, did you enjoy Veena Varadhan's account? Just for your information, these fleeting moments experiences of Mrs. Veena Varadhan were voiced over by Radio Sai's contributing editor, Ms. Vasanti Sundaram of Dubai. Now, as always, we'd love to hear from you. Your feedback is really very important to us. So please go ahead and write us that email at listener@radiosai.org. Before we go any further, let us remind ourselves that Sri Satya Sai Baba encourages us to recognize who we really are. We are not these minds, he says, we are not these bodies. We are the eternal spirit that temporarily occupies these minds and bodies. We can appreciate and become who we really are by turning inward with faith in God and an intense yearning to know Him. Our conscience is a reflection of the eternal spirit. Sri Satya Sai Baba tells us that our conscience is our master. When we follow our conscience, our thoughts, words and deeds will be noble and consistent. Spirituality is having the courage and the determination to follow our conscience in all things and at all times. In doing so, we recognize that we are all united in God. We are bound together by divine love. That is why Baba declared as follows. He said, and I quote him, "I have come to light the lamp of love in your hearts, to see that it shines day by day with added luster. I have come to tell you of this universal, unitary faith, this spiritual principle, this path of love, this duty of love, this obligation to love. Every religion teaches man to fill his being with the glory of God and to evict the pettiness of conceit. It trains him in the methods of detachment and discernment, so that he may aim high and attain spiritual liberation. Believe that all hearts are motivated by the one and only God, that all faiths glorify the one and only God, that all names in all languages and all forms man can conceive denote the one and only God. His adoration is best done by means of love. Cultivate that attitude of oneness between men of all creeds and all countries. This is the message of love I bring. That is the message I wish you to take to heart." Unquote, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear sisters and brothers, let's celebrate in our daily lives the all-inclusive vision of the cosmic light that had assumed the form of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba for a period of 85 years. Such practice will surely make us much more accepting of differences and more respectful of them. With that, it is now time to close Morning Glory, and may I beg your indulgence to reflect on just some more magical words I have received last year from some fellow seekers at the Bansuri Meditation in Pune, and they go like this. Ahead of you is a magical 24 hours filled by you. It is a precious possession, it's yours alone. No one can take it from you, it's unstealable. Each one of us is a spark from the divine light. As we sow, so we reap. The divine will lead us from darkness to endless love. Each of us can become a sanctuary love. I beg your pardon, I'll say that again. Each of us can become a sanctuary lamp of love and light. Unquote. With that divine message, I now offer Morning Glory at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And to bid you Sai Ram, before I do that, I ask you to please be well, stay inspired, and do whatever it takes to stay positive, and that includes staying clear of all negative environments. Thank you for your company. Till we meet next Thursday, loving Sai Ram from all of us at Radio Sai, and now I leave you with some delightful music. The first song, Raghupati Raghav, a favorite of Mahatma Gandhi, is in the voice of Brother Ravi Kumar and Swami's precious primary school children. Please enjoy. Thank you.
रघुपति राघव राजा राम पतित पावन सीता राम ईश्वर अल्लाह तेरो नाम
ईश्वर अल्लाह तेरो नाम
सबको सन्मति दो भगवान प्रभुपति राघव राजा राम पति कपावन सीता राम जय सीता राम भज प्यारे मन सीता राम सीता राम जय सीता राम भज प्यारे मन सीताराम रघुपति राघव राजा राम पतित पावन सीताराम
Take my life.